Want more stories in your life without adding to your TBR? That's where Audible comes in. I use it for the original novellas, the Plus catalog like Gianna Rayburn's Veronica Speedwell series, and those audiobook sales that you can beat. Right now, Audible has a special offer for new and returning members. Click the link in the show notes to see what deal you'll get and start listening today.
Hi, Rena. Welcome to Trinix Podcast.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited to be here.
So happy to have you here. I was telling you, I'm a big fan of your work in Substack. I love how your takes on romance, and we're going to talk a little bit more about it because I think you look at romance from a different lens that is actually not unique, but I think it's needed in this time of that we're getting bombarded with a lot of information, a lot of new books and a lot of new things, and to give them like a different refresher of a view. So
appreciate that.
Tell us a little bit about yourself.
So I will tell you a little bit about my background as a romance reader and then also like myself in real life. So I have been reading romance for, I'm always afraid to say this because then it tells people how old I am, but almost three decades now. I started out, I think every romance reader did, who has been an OG, stealing my mom's paperbacks. In this case, they were Nora Roberts. Fun fact is that I have read every Nora Roberts book ever published, including her Harlequins, with the exception of, I'm not a huge paranormal reader, but I pretty much read everything else she's published. And I have just been reading voraciously and widely in the genre for a really long time. I read all Regencies. I read Danielle Steele. I read the old romantic suspense, which is a genre that didn't exist for a long time and now is starting to come back again. Everything old is new again, which is fun. And I, earlier this year in June, I went through a personal tragedy and I desperately needed a diversion. I went through a stillbirth.
So sorry.
Thank you. And I was fine. Like the endless siren call of the IVF forums on Reddit was proving to be very alluring. And as you can imagine, that is not a great place to spend surfeits of your time. And so I was working with a loss therapist and she's, you need something else to do. She's like, do you have any hobbies? I'm like, no. She's like, do you like TV? I'm like, not really. She's like, okay, what do you like to do? We started chatting about it. And eventually she's like, well, I don't know if you've heard of this thing Substack, but you should try that and see if it's a good distraction. And so I was like, okay. And so in June, I like logged on, made a Substack account. And then in a very funny twist of fate, my first essay went viral and brought me just the most amazing community of readers. And so I've been plugging away at it ever since June, every week or every other week, just kind of posting my takes on the genre. But outside of my background as a romance reader and a brand new writer, I always like to tell people that before June, all I wrote was emails. So this is new to me. I work in tech. I live in Chicago now with my husband and my about to be 4-year-old son. And prior to that, I spent a decade and change in Manhattan working on Wall Street. So that is sort of my background, romance and non.
You only have similar backgrounds in some ways because we live, long-term listeners will know that I live in Chicago in the good old year 2020 when I was prolifically doing podcasts because I did not know anybody. So I was talking to a bunch of people and we're living in a similar area, neighborhood, but same time, like the New York transition out of New York, out of Chicago, and then trying to figure out, make it work and transition careers, life, and all those different things, and realizing maybe New York is a great place to grow, but it may not be the place to retire or to actually settle in new phases. At least that was for me. I was like, no, I think I got everything that I needed.
I always like to say New York takes its pound of flesh from you. Like it really does. The city demands something of you. It gives something back. But after a decade, I know for me, I was like, okay, I'm ready to hang up my boots. I do miss it, but yeah. I can't say I miss the pace of life as I've gotten a little old. Chicago's no. Just a little more manageable.
Yeah, I spent literally 5 years meditating, like literally meditation just to slow the fuck down and slow the pace. And understanding and getting my body accumulated. Like I actually lived the first 3 years in Florida without a car. So I was just like in my own isolation place. I will go to classes. I would try to take Ubers to places. But I was like in this place of like quiet space to then come back and emerge. And it's a detox. Like literally I haven't been to New York in 5 years and I still consider, I actually called my coworker. I was like, just like a $90 plane ticket to go to New York. And I was like, yeah, I can go. And I was like, no, I don't want to go. I'm still not ready. I love my friends. I miss my friends dearly, but I don't miss the energy that shocks you just to be, just be in the street and be, and like the fact that you said, oh my God, is just walking down the street, just nothing. Like it just, the money goes, it goes away.
It's very true.
It's hard.
That is very true.
All right. So first things first, I would love for you to come back and talk about Nora and give us a guide where to get started, because she does have a full feedback list. She actually releases 3 to 4 books a year. So it's not, she works like your favorite independent self-published author who publishes like every other month. Nora is the same way in a tradition of publish on stuff. So she's a machine, and she, it can be intimidating, but I know she has so many gems. So I would love for you.
Yeah, I would be happy to come and do a Nora retrospective.
Yes, because I think people need to read her work. Like a lot of work stem from, a lot of the work that we see now, especially Women to Suspense, comes from Nora's
early. 100%. And her books are so plot rich in a way that I really miss in modern day romances. I wrote an essay about this, but one of the things I think is really interesting about contemporary romance today versus Nora, and it is like just an allegory about the larger way that life has changed in the last 20, 25 years, at least in the West, is Nora's books and her style. She has plots, her plots have subplots, but more than that, that she has such an insanely broad set of characters in each novel.
Yeah.
And the characters all have, like the side characters all have subplots. There are often scenes in the books where the only people in the scene are two sub characters and the main characters are nowhere to be found. And you get a lot less interiority, but you get a lot more of the main characters being contextualized and defined by the gaze of the array of cast and characters around them. Whereas in modern day romances, a lot of times the only two characters that are convincingly rendered on the page are the male lead and the female lead. Even like the single side character that you might have is often little more than a prompt, and sometimes fails the Bechdel test. Like, should they're really there just to drive exposition? And that isn't the case with Nora books. And I think it's so interesting to look at how society has changed and how we're so much more isolated and we just have less richly populated lives these days. Yes. And I think our books reflect that. And we all are much more obsessed with the id and the ego and ourself. And so there's so much more interiority. You spend so much time in the heroine's head in modern day romances in a way that you just never used to. And I think that's fascinating. Really just think it's such an interesting reflection of how society has changed. But man, it is a stark difference between the type of books.
Yes, I think it's looking back to like our lives in the 90s, and it was very different. The childhood in the 90s was very different than the childhood in the 2025. We were not expected to be home. We were expected to hang out with our friends. We were expected to just run around and do all the different things. And it's an example of like my life post-2020 for 3 years, as I was saying earlier. I was just sitting in meditation. I was working. I was doing all the stuff. But reality was like trying to figure out, being contemplation and trying to figure, like, what do you want to with your life? And there's purpose with that, but there's also lack of forward movement in many ways, and this stunts your growth. And I think it's a lot. And we're seeing that in the conversations of those post-pandemic books that we're seeing. The way the world looks is very different than the way the world looked before that period of time. So. All right, so you actually, I love this slice of romance that you look at, which is the upmarket romance. There's a little bit of rom-coms, there's a little bit of prose, there's conversation about emotional depth. And so talk to us about that specific slice of the genre, because romance is a pretty wide genre. We've seen romance suspense, we're seeing romantic thrillers, erotic, horror, like mashmash like of different genres coming in, along with the standard subgenres like historical romance, paranormal romance, dark romance, and contemporary romance.
Yeah. So I think first and foremost, I'm a reasonably broad reader in the sense that I read historicals and I read romantic suspense. I read contemporary. I don't dabble in paranormal or dark. That's not as much what I'm interested in. And I will say I have stayed away from romantasy because that is just an entirely separate and very engrossing category that I think it would be difficult for me to cover while I'm also covering largely contemporary. And the other thing I would say is distinctive about my taste, and this is not a normative judgment, it's just how I read. I do tend to predominantly read trad published books. I don't read a ton of indies. I think indie books are fantastic. I think it is incredible what that burgeoning ecosystem has done in terms of making things more accessible for authors and just like broadening the horizons and the niches that we see. Like monster romance was not a thing. Why choose was not a thing. But my what I look at for the Substack tends to be more conventionally, traditionally published books. And within that, what I really care a lot about is craft. And I care a lot about line level work. For me, a book that is well plotted with no emotional logic gaps for the characters is sort of table stakes. But what makes a story really resonant for me is the prose work. And I think increasingly what we're seeing in the genre, and certainly led by Emily Henry, is this interesting intersection that we're starting to get where some romance books are really pushing up against literary conventions. They're certainly not at litfic yet. We get, you know, all the romance tropes and beats and you get the happy ending. But the level of prose work we're seeing, and I would particularly call out in recent years, Annabel Moynihan's prose has just leveled up to an incredible level of craft that just makes her books an absolute joy to read. And she's a very distinctive voice. I'd say her and Emily Henry are the two top selling authors, with Taylor Jenkins Reid and then Carly Fortune sort of behind. I don't think Carly Fortune's prose is quite as good. It's good, but and it certainly qualifies as upmarket, but I don't think she's hitting the high watermark. But those stalwarts sort of really define the genre. But coming in now behind them in that lane that they've opened up is a whole cast of characters. We have some really strong debuts this year. We have other authors who had been writing for small audiences who are getting a lot broader audiences now just by the number of eyeballs that we're seeing in romance. And there are a lot of litfic readers that are starting to stray into romance because of the level of craft that we're seeing. And that's sort of where I focus in terms of the books that I think are interesting and the ones that I think I enjoy writing about.
I want to know that some of these authors, Emily Henry and Annabel Moynihan, used to write YA. And yep. So they're actually, and we're seeing that. I think Katie Cajuno was another yep. one who wrote YA. So a lot of YA authors are moving towards the romance space, or either different romance spaces. I think Jenny Elder Mulkey went to Mystery Rom-Coms and stuff like that. So we're seeing the YA authors that probably in our 20s and early 30s we saw were big. And they're transitioning over to a different audience, and they're bringing some of the elements that they have written, as well as what they actually enjoy reading. Because I've talked to many of these authors, and you'd like to read upmarket, litter fiction, women's fiction. And so we're seeing those elements actually in a grown-up space, and not mishmash. And what they're reading is actually showing up in this space more elevated than would have for a younger market.
Yeah, that's really true. I also think readers are aging up faster than they probably should, and that's a whole separate discussion. And so YA readers are starting to read romance at much younger ages than they used to, and so inherently the YA authors are following that.
Yeah.
Like Katie Cajuno, to your point, is a great example of that. Jeff Zentner is a great example of that. Stephanie Perkins' adult debut just came out last week, Overdue. Maureen Gu's adult debut is coming out later this fall, I believe. So like you're 100% right. That trend is just exploding.
And it was on purpose, because 2018, and this is like about the market, 2018, we see the rise of the cartoon covers.
Yes.
And the purpose of the trade paperback cartoon covers, because it used to be mass paperbacks for romance specifically. It was, the purpose was they wanted to get those YA readers. They wanted to move them up in one way or another. And it was on purpose. Like it was just, our audience is not stagnant. So we're going to try to get this audience, because technically that's our audience. It was, we saw the rise of the new adult during that era. And then like the college, and which we see the resurgence in 2020 when those books actually come back and get a new life. And once you get a new life, they're like, hey, there's a whole genre. Because I did experience that in 2016 when I started reading, because I was a YA reader and I heard about romance. I was not a romance reader as an earlier 8 years. And so I went and then I just like binge on the books, as one does. And then I just kept binging and binging to the point where I was like, oh, like what's my market? What do I enjoy? And what do I need a little bit more? Because you get saturated with the same thing over. And then you try to figure out, expand your reading taste. And the journey is happening. But I think it's like looking at the market where it's been going and publishers, what they've been doing to try to get that market to grow up.
And yes,
it's sad for YA, that there's some great YA, diverse voices, marginalized voices, own voice, like LGBTQ and YA space are amazing. They're doing a better job sometimes than romance, but we're seeing that market shift.
Yeah, and I think it'll just be, I mean, I don't know how ethical I think it is for publishers to try and entice younger readers into mature stories with cartoon characters. And I think if you ask like the historical romance novelists, they'll tell you that cartoon characters definitely played a role in killing historical romance for the last couple of years. And I think we're now starting to see authors like push back against that with publishers and say, no, I want a different look. But it obviously has been a great thing for the growth of the romance genre as a whole. Like, it is amazing to me how many readers of my Substack never read romance before 2020. And like, you see that data, but it's just wild seeing them. And like, they are missing. And I've been like, every month or so, I've been doing a profile on a historical author. I did Dora Roberts. I did Judith McNaught a couple weeks ago. I'm going to do Susan Elizabeth Phillips. How could you not? Danielle Seale. Yes. Like, there are so many readers.
Sports romance. So OG, the reason why we had sports romance is Susan Elizabeth Phillips. And she has Ray Jens from the 2000s. Not that far away.
No. I mean, the reason we have great career romances is Julie James. Julie James. Yeah. So like, the entire office romance genre could run. But so many readers and voracious readers of romance just have no idea of the history of the genre. And so it's interesting to kind of do those retrospectives and introduce these authors to new audiences. And also, like, to the point about Nora Roberts, see how their oeuvres hold up to the contemporary gaze.
Yeah. Yeah, I love this. I am excited for what we're to call for your subset. Let's include some book recommendations. What do you have to our listeners recommend?
So I will not give the ones that everybody knows, right? No one needs me to recommend Emily Henry, but there are a couple of debuts out. One actually is out today. Another one is out earlier this year that I just thought were astonishingly good. So the one that came out today is called The Best Worst Thing by Lauren Oakey. It is really gritty and realistic in a way I think a lot of more saccharine romances just are not. But it still manages to get a incredibly emotionally resonant love story and happy ever after ending. And I think it touches on issues that are really relevant to the modern woman. We're seeing more of that in own voices in terms of representation and more chronic health issues, which I think are fantastic. But sometimes we're still not seeing the other issues that animate women's lives. And so The Best Worst Thing is heavily centered around someone's infertility journey, which I had not seen done particularly well in a romance before. Mm-hmm. A lot of press has kind of mentioned Lauren Oakey as like a new voice in romance to watch. And I'm not someone who typically makes predictions, but I would be surprised if her debut does not do astonishingly well based on the early press I'm seeing. So I thought that was particularly good. You Between the Lines by Katie Naiman it might technically be new adult if you look at the shelving, because the protagonists are relatively young. But it takes place in an MFA program with two competitive students vying for a spot at the end of the year. I don't think the storytelling is that fresh in the sense that this is enemies to lovers or rivals to lovers story that we've seen before. The MFA setting is a little bit different, but academics are not. What makes that book, however, really unique is the line level work is exceptional. Katie Naiman, the author, has an MFA in poetry herself, but she uses poems in the book as a structural device. And we see the ones written by the male character and the female character. And it is just stunning. It's really well done. I always like books with unique structural elements. And so I thought those were two debuts I really liked this year. In terms of other books that have really interesting structural elements, August Lane, which our book club just talked about last week, by Regina Black. It's Regina's sophomore book. I believe her debut was called The Art of the Scandal. It did technically make the USA Today list, I believe, but I still feel like she's underread, as yes, she should be. It's about a Black country artist, two Black country artists. Again, the line level work is just incredible. Such lush, beautiful writing, but has really interesting structural elements in it. It has some interviews in it, has some podcast transcripts in it, actually. And I was blown away by her talent. I'm so excited to see what she writes next. And then you mentioned Katie Cattugno. I will like forever shout off the top of every rooftop about Heavy Hitter, which I think is just possibly one of the most underappreciated romances of the last couple of years. It And I mean, I hate to say this, but I think the publisher just did her such a disservice with the cover. It is a book that is purportedly a Taylor Swift fanfic, Taylor Swift and Travis Kelce fanfics, which I think is just really reductionist. I think instead what it is, it's a book that examines the question of what would it be like to live the life of Taylor Swift in the sense of to have so much scrutiny constantly on you and also to be unafraid of how ambitious you are. But I think what that book does so well that I really wish we saw more of in romance is the characters are so realistic in an unflinching way. It's not like the male hero does not have a six pack. He is not 6 feet tall with perfect brunette hair. Like he is not always conventionally attractive, but the heroine falls in love with him anyway. And the heroine is not particularly palatable and candidly can be kind of a bitch sometimes. And yet he falls in love with her anyway. And so I think that it is stunningly well done and really underappreciated. And then I think the last one I would mention is just a fun one, which is by Jeff Zentner, who's a YA author. But it's a romance written by a straight male author, which is fascinating. You are starting to see some of this in the indie space, but in the trad publisher space, he might be the only one out there, man. There's a hero.
There's three of them. Very few. It's a minority. I've had a couple of them come in the show. So it's like a very slim
minority.
Yeah. It's what are we talking about? Are you underrepresented right now?
But he is a YA author. He also writes in verse. His line level work is just beautiful and is clearly informed by the amount of poetry he reads. I will admit I picked it up because it was blurbed by Emily Henry. And I was like, well, if Emily Henry is blurbing this, it can't be bad. And it blew me away. And he has another book coming out next year as well that I'm very excited about. He is making a definitive shift into the romance genre. So those are, I think, some of the ones I would recommend that are a little bit less well-known that have just really thrilled me to discover the last year.
Oh my gosh. You mentioned a couple ones that I have not even heard of, which is very rare. So now I'm like, holy crap, I had to go to my library hold and actually put them on there. One, because I want the libraries to buy them. We gotta get them to go see the movement.
I often feel like I am on a treasure hunt where like one of the places I get recommendations is actually agents' manuscript wish lists because they themselves are such eclectic and broad readers and they know a lot about. So I'm constantly looking at agent wish lists to see if I missed anything, which is, I think, how I might have found the first Katie Kitano. But I'm just always hunting and like you, I sample constantly. I never used to be a DNFer until I started the Substack. And now I'm just like hunting for those books that I want to get excited to champion. I probably start 10 books these days for every one I finish. But when I find what I love, it is such a thrill. And I'm so excited about it that it's worth it.
I love this. And that's a brilliant idea. I never thought to go to agents' wishlist. I've seen some of them. And I'm like, oh, that sounds like a great book. And I've talked to authors who's like, the agent was like, I want this particular super niche. I want Anna Green Gables in this particular setting, in this particular thing. And I just wrote it and that's in my manuscript. And you're like, I got the point. So I think that's a brilliant place. I should go look for recommendations, also get ideas and trends and what's selling and what's not selling. And usually they'll tell you what's buying.
They definitely do. They see the entire market. And so I think they're just a underappreciated source for book recommendations. Like I'm announcing tomorrow our November book pick, which is Betty Corello's 32 Days in May, which I had never heard of. And it has, again, shockingly few Goodreads reviews. But I found it through an agent wish list. And I was like, okay, I'm going to go hunt this one out. And it turned out to be fantastic. And I'm so excited about it.
Yes, it's on my list to read. One of my reading friends loved it. And said that this was like, this is the type of romance that we like. Because I do like upmarket romance. Like, those are the books that I do enjoy. I need to be in a certain mood for them because I'm testing out a bunch of stuff. But I personally gravitate towards well-written, do not suspend disbelief, but emotional. Also, some green flags, some red flags, some a little bit of like morally, not morally gray, like everything in indie, like Jerry's going to kill you. But like morally gray in the sense of like you're trying to figure out. It's not so black or white relationship. And I like the fact that I don't have to think about like logistics. I'm reading a book and something about Australia work permits. And I was like, I know this is a mess. And there's no way this person works in Australia. I just know it because I'm live and I'm know that you can be in your 20s and you work 1 year in Australia, but the next year they send you to a farm to do manual labor. And now I'm like, this person's not doing manual labor. So how does this work? And so sometimes I'm like, I would like you to do a little bit of research just before you put them in rent that setting. So I appreciate that. But Rena, tell us about the Substack. Where can we find it? And how can we expect?
So it is smartromance.substack.com. Pretty easy. But if you Google smart romance, I'm proud to say we have enough readers now that it will come up on a Google search, which is kind of fun. And it is a little bit of a mix of things. So every month we get a column with a Q&A with an author. So we've featured Kate Hash, who had a masterful debut this year for people who like women's fiction. I have to look up the title. Grace Harris is Under Construction. She did a Q&A for us. Anna Holguin, whose first book was Up Close and Personal and has a fantastic sophomore book out next year, did one for us. So it's a mix of author Q&As, a column I called Books That Deserve a Better Finish, so books that I think just were underappreciated, some craft essays. So I had a very funny one with a man on the title picture called When the Narrator Is Talking About the Legibility of Desire in Romance, which is a fun topic. And then some OG retrospectives. So as I mentioned, Judith McNaught, Nora Roberts, retrospectives of their entire history and like why I think people should be reading them. So it's a little bit of stuff for everyone. And then I would be remiss if I didn't mention, I think our most popular feature now, every month we do a book club. And what I love about book club is I know how busy the modern woman is. It is hard for me to dial into my local book club. And so our book club is written. And it's in the comments section of posts, so people can just kind of hop in and join the discussion whenever they have time over the course of the week, which I really like. And the discussions of our books have just been so incredible the last couple months. I'm really excited to see what people have to think about Betty Corello's in November.
I love this. And I love your group chat because you have a great chat, a community of people. Like, if you're looking for a specific recommendation, you have people who are like willing to say, hey, this might work for you. This might also work for you. So it's a great place to find your reading twins and reading buddies and who give you the best recommendations. So
totally. The community I have been able to find has just been exceptional. I'm blown away every day by the quality of readers and the thoughtfulness of the romance readers. The last two virtual book clubs we had, Regina Black and Jeff Sentner, both authors sent me emails being like, your community has some of the smartest romance readers we've ever met. And I think it's so true. I'm so lucky.
Thank you for starting Substack. Thank you for building this community and making a safe space for romance creators to discuss and to share their passion about this. So thank you.
Yes. Thank you for being a part of it.
Rena, thank you so much for being on the show.
Yes. I so enjoyed our conversation. And I'm going to take you up on the offer to come back and discuss Nora Roberts in the future.
Are you an author, publisher, or book-related business looking to reach passionate readers? What's Your Next Podcast is a perfect place to connect with an engaged audience of romance and mystery lovers who are always on the hunt for their next great read. Now, we're offering sponsorship opportunities. Whether you're launching a new book, promoting an upcoming release, showcasing a bookish product or services, we can help you get the word out. Let's work together to bring your books or businesses to readers who are ready to discover something new. Please visit whatyourrenextblog.com/sponsorships. To learn more or reach out to chat about the perfect sponsorship or package for you. Thank you much for listening. Your next great reader is waiting for you.